Blog Talk Radio.
Much less detail of the podcast on a Wednesday night, January 22nd, 2014. I'm Dre, he's Jay. We got the NFC and AFC conference title games that took place Sunday to review. No shortage of material, all sorts of things to talk about in those games. But first, Jason, I guess I got to congratulate you for the second year in a row. You managed to put the AFC representative in the Super Bowl. You made that prediction in August. Last year was Baltimore, this year the Denver Broncos, so congratulations. I guess you the man.
Well, thank you. I won't go all Richard Sherman on you, and I would, you know, after winning the title last week and then sort of forgot that I had the Broncos in the Super Bowl. I had to remind myself of that. It's nice to have that picked. Of course, I picked against them last week, not completely to lose the game, but I did pick against the Broncos, even though they were my Super Bowl pick. But I think I'm still reeling so hard from my NFC pick that it's just sort of bittersweet that I do have the AFC representative in the Super Bowl for, like we said, for a second year in a row. But thank you. I will gladly accept that for whatever it's all worth, which is nothing.
Did you have me muted? This some bitch started muting you by itself. I did not push a damn thing. I don't know why it
doesn't
did that.
It doesn't even want me to accept the fact that I had it.
I just happened to be looking up and saw it happen, or else it would have kept you muted. I wouldn't even notice.
Damn, your computer doesn't even want me to speak.
That's right. My computer hates you.
Wow.
We had a very interesting Sunday for those two games, but I had lost the faith. I had tweeted to you somewhere in the third quarter when the 49ers went up 10 points on the Seahawks. I tweeted at you, can we take our picks back? Is it too late?
It wasn't looking good. New England definitely let us down. I think we both overestimated the Patriots. We both were waiting for the other shoe to drop with them, and it finally did. You know, all the doubts, everything that we thought about them all year long, just wouldn't play in the playoffs for them, all came to fruition. Although we were spot on with their running game against Indianapolis not translating into success against Denver. I think we both were on board with that. You know, everybody was all like, oh, Denver's got to worry about LeGarrette Blount now. And I think we were more of the opinion that was a bit more of a one-off than they're going to carry this through. I did think that Denver was going to have to spend a little more of their resources game planning for it. But it was Tom Brady was the problem. He couldn't do anything against a really, really substandard defense. It was surprising.
Yeah, New England goes to Denver in the first game on Sunday, the AFC title game. The Broncos come out on top 26-16. We didn't know that it was going to be quite that bad as far as the New England run game because LeGarrette Blount got nothing going. He got, I believe, 5 carries and gained like 6 yards. He just absolutely was not going anywhere. He seemed to run into whoever the first guy was waiting to tackle him, put him down, and that definitely was not the case against Indianapolis. And I personally think that, you know, Coach Bill Belichick got the Sandman Cane out and gave him the early hook because when you run into the first guy and just drop every time, even if the guy is, you know, Pot Roast Knighton, you got to love the nickname Pot Roast. No matter who it is, if you got a bruising back that his job is to break the other team down and physically punish them, and the first time he gets hit, every time he goes down, you got to make a move and make a decision to get him out of there early, and that's exactly what Belichick did.
Yeah, and on the other side, I think the one thing, and I know this crept into everybody's mind who was watching the game, and it never happened. Everybody was waiting for Peyton Manning to sort of have that Brett Favre moment. You know, mm-hmm. the this isn't Detroit moment. You know, everybody was waiting for him to just throw the ugly pick late in the game and allow New England back into the game. And New England did work their way back into the game, just like the Chargers. Not the Chargers. Who did Denver play the week before? Well, it was the Chargers. I'm losing my mind. Just like they did the week before against San Diego. I should have stuck with what I said the first time. So it sort of felt like that all over again. You know, they just bent, but they didn't break. And they kind of allowed a team to creep their way back into the game that they probably shouldn't have. So it almost felt like the same exact game 2 weeks in a row, where the defense looked great for three quarters and then took it a little easier in the fourth quarter to just kind of, like, drain the clock. But both times you're waiting for Peyton Manning to screw the thing up. And he didn't. Two games in a row, they completely deserve to be in the Super Bowl.
He sure didn't screw it up. He was awesome from the get-go. He was sharp. His throws got exactly where they needed to go. No matter how ugly they looked, no matter how much they wobbled, he put them right on the money. That was about as good a game as I've seen Peyton Manning play. He waited for the right time to pull out his best effort, I tell you. He could not be stopped. And on the other side, Tom Brady just looked horrible from the get-go. I have no idea why. He was getting more pressured than Peyton Manning was getting pressured. Peyton Manning didn't get pressure but three times in the entire game, so that was never an issue for him. I loved Denver playing him out of the shotgun the entire game. Like, if you're going to rush him, you're going to really have to come get him. He's going to be back, you know, 5 yards back of the ball the entire time. But Tom Brady just did not get in any kind of rhythm. He was overshooting his intended receivers. He had the big bomb, of course, to Julian Edelman that would have been a touchdown, except he overthrew him by 5 yards. And that seemed to sort of be an ominous foreshadowing of the day's events.
Right. And if you're Bill Belichick, you're going to say that the whole reason that Peyton Manning was able to get off was because Wes Welker planted Aqib Talib into the turf in a quote-unquote dirty play, although for the number of times I've seen that play, it looks like a wide receiver blocking and, you know, blocking a guy who wasn't expecting it. Little Wes Welker, you know, didn't take a 40-minute shower and missed the second half of the game.
That's right. You observed and tweeted that it was after Talib went down that Manning really got it cranked up, picking on the replacement, Logan Ryan. And it was kind of hard to watch because it was obvious that they were picking on him. The TV broadcast, Jim Nance, Phil Simms, made a big deal about Logan Ryan coming in, having 5 interceptions on the season and leading the team. Well, there's a reason that he had 5 interceptions because he was just a nickelback or a dimeback. He could go out there and sort of just play back and jump the ball and try to get interceptions. He didn't have to worry about playing really solid, sound cornerback. But when you're a starter, there's so many more responsibilities. You have to be a short tackler. You have to play the right cover. You have to be out there on the field for every play. And it was obvious when he came in, this is why Logan Ryan is a nickelback and not a starter.
Yeah, up until the point when Talib got knocked out, he had been doing fairly good work against Demaryius Thomas. I mean, there's no denying the fact that that was a completely different secondary without Talib out there. But, you know, the Broncos did what good teams do. They found a weakness in the other team, and they exploited the heck out of it, and the Patriots never adjusted.
No.
Now, did you think it was dirty?
Oh, absolutely not. Oh, my goodness. There was nothing at all dirty about that. It was, outside of the fact that it was a pick and it should be a penalty every time, but I'm actually okay with them not calling that a penalty every time, because similar to holding in the trenches and similar to traveling in the NBA, if you called it every time it actually happened, your games would be 14 hours long. So I'm okay with them not calling that every time. It was a pick, and it's illegal in that respect, but dirty as far as Walker hit him with a cross-body block kind of awkwardly in an attempt to injure him, no. If that was his way of trying to hurt Aqib Talib, that was a really piss-poor way of doing it, because he didn't dive at his knee. He didn't try to blow his knee out. He didn't try to put his helmet into his ribs, or he didn't try to clock him upside the head. He basically awkwardly threw his body into him because he was throwing a pick. So, no, that was absolutely not a dirty play.
No, I completely agree. I think it's just some sour grapes on Belichick's part. Couple reasons why. One, they got knocked out of the game, and, of course, the other side of that is it was the guy they let go who did it. You know, Welker.
Yeah, the guy that Belichick can't stand. You know, the guy that made
Welker
fun of Belichick. Welker went against all of Belichick's little rules about talking in the media. Belichick laid down the law as far as after the whole Rex Ryan thing came out with his foot fetish and whatnot, that you weren't supposed to go talking about that in the media. And Welker's the one that turned right around and gave that wonderful interview about, we got to put our best foot forward and we really got to put our foot down this week. And, boy, you know, we got to be on our toes. It was so beautiful the way he did that. But that was completely against Belichick's little edict to not talk about that, because he didn't want that to be a distraction or, you know, something in the locker room. So Welker was the guy. He was that guy that liked to push Belichick's buttons and get on his nerves. And then he goes out and drops that big pass in the Super Bowl that may have been overthrown a touch by Tom Brady. But the point is, you know, Welker talked all that talk, played the sort of the Joker role in that locker room, which Belichick didn't like, and then didn't perform at 100%. He didn't make every single play, and therefore that made him, you know, the locker room cancer, quote-unquote. And I think that was a big reason why Belichick made the decision to let him go.
Yeah, no, and you brought up the play that I always bring up is the overthrow, the Tom Brady overthrow in the Super Bowl that Welker didn't bring in towards the end of that game that would have given the Patriots a much better chance to win the game. Everybody was quick to beat up Wes Welker for dropping a pass that was clearly overthrown. Was it uncatchable? No, it wasn't uncatchable, but it wasn't a perfect throw. It wasn't on his numbers. He's a short guy, and it was high. And ball went right off of his fingertips and fell to the ground, and everybody was quick to defend Brady and beat up Welker. So I'm sure he didn't mind the fact that he knocked somebody out of the game for the other team, especially their highest impact corner, but I don't think his intent was, I'm going to run a pick and I'm knocking Aqib Talib the fuck out of this game. So Bill Belichick couldn't just shut up.
Yes, completely agree. So Peyton Manning had this long drive between the first and the second quarter where he was picking apart Logan Ryan, and then I could tell New England's front seven were sort of dropping back a little more because they knew they were going to have to protect Logan Ryan. He was getting destroyed and picked down so badly. And then as soon as he does that, of course, Peyton Manning recognizes it and starts audibling some great run plays and some great draws for No'Shawn Moreno. And as a result, they started running up the score on the ground, not just Peyton through the air. It was basically a total team domination where whatever you thought Peyton was going to do, he did the opposite and took advantage of everything New England gave him to the tune of 507 yards of total offense for Denver on a day. It was pretty much no contest.
Yeah, and we're hanging on at the very end, just hoping that we can get a cheap cover and the Patriots can get a late score. But it wasn't meant to be. It clearly wasn't meant to be. So we definitely got the short end of the stick in the first game.
So what kind of impression did Denver as a team leave on you as far as their Super Bowl chances? This was obviously as impressive an effort as they could have. Do you think it was a little flukish? Do you think it was perfect confluence of events with the injury to their best corner and all that, or do you think Denver might really be for real?
Well, I think Denver would have won the game either way. I think they would have had a little bit more difficult time, but the point that you brought up about Peyton Manning was Peyton Manning made every adjustment correct. Every read was the right one. You know, when Aqib Talib goes out of the game, they picked on the guy who came in to replace him. If Talib was still out there, it just would have been somebody else. It might not have been Demaryius Thomas shredding them. It might have been, Julius Thomas. Might have been Welker. He was in complete command that day. They weren't going to lose, especially with the effort the Patriots put out there. You know, the Patriots' offense was the reason they lost the game. They didn't get blown out. You know, they gave up. They held Denver under 30, which you'd think with New England and Tom Brady would be enough to keep them in the game. Their offense lost them the game, not their defense.
So New England moves on to New York, New Jersey for the Super Bowl. They await the NFC champions, which turned out to be the Seattle Seahawks, in a game just as dirty and physical as we thought it would be. It was all that and then some. Seattle with the 23-17 victory, somehow covering that 3 and a hook despite losing by 10 in the third quarter. Just incredible sequence of events that led to that. What in the world, where do you start breaking that game down?
Honestly, to me, it was all that fourth quarter. Colin Kaepernick melted down in the fourth quarter. Just completely wilted under the pressure. Seattle wouldn't go away. You know, they hung around. They did what they needed to do. Their defense played good. Their offense was having some trouble getting on track. I know it got better late, but that's usually, is that more of a product that they were just given a short field several times? I would say yes. Then they started to smell the blood in the water, and then they really started to look aggressive. But, yeah, going into that fourth quarter, it didn't look good. And it definitely didn't help that Kaepernick just changed. It's something happened. Either the crowd started to get to him, Seattle's defense made some adjustments, but, you know, a fumble and then those two picks, and he just wasn't the same guy. And I think maybe the moment got to him.
Yeah, if you break down the individual turnovers, the fumble, I almost don't fault him that much for that, because when you got a guy in Cliff Averill that gets around the end, that motherfucker was shot out of a cannon the way he got around the corner to get to Kaepernick. Kaepernick got a little pressure up the middle on that pass and rolled to his left, and he had barely gotten out of the pocket before he got caught from behind and strip fumbled. And I'm sure he did not expect anybody to be there from behind that quick. But because Averill got off so fast on the right tackle, he was able to get around the corner completely untouched, and that's why he got there to the Kaepernick so quick. No excuse for him to be careless with the football and get strip fumbled, but I kind of don't want to blame him too much for that, in my opinion. That first interception, the one to Cam Chancellor, is about the worst pick I've ever seen. That was horrible. The guy standing right there, how he didn't see him, I do not know. He looked like me making throws on Madden, and I can't see shit. You've played against me many times in Madden, and I'm terrible at quarterback because I don't know what I'm looking at. That looked like me out there. That throw, as I tweeted out, nobody who makes that throw in a conference title game deserves to win the game. You just forfeited your right to win that football game making that throw. And that third pick was just Richard Sherman making an awesome play.
Well, yeah, the second one that he threw, you know, or the first pick that he threw, the second turnover, but that first pick where he threw it to, I believe it was Cam Chancellor, right?
Yeah.
And it was so bad that I'm sitting there watching the game with my wife, and it's a fairly intense game. I'm really not wanting San Francisco to go to the Super Bowl again. We saw that. So I was kind of rooting for Seattle. We had picked them. I wanted to at least win one out of the two picks. as soon as the ball left his hand, and I was, oh, that's picked, because you just saw the safety just waiting. He's just standing there. I mean, it wasn't quite Larry Brown bad, but it was close.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it was.
You know? Well, you know, the receiver was at least standing right behind Chancellor. In the Super Bowl, nobody was there. I mean, that was
right,
just going, oh, hey, you, here you go. Because the receiver was just gone. The receiver was on a completely different route. Kaepernick threw the ball to the right spot. The problem was the Seattle defenders just standing there waiting for the ball. And you see the ball in the air. And the whole time it's just beeline right to the guy. The guy's, you know, the receiver has no clue what's going on. It was just the ball just hanging in midair. And you have to know what immediately went through Kaepernick's head as soon as he let that ball go. You know what popped into
his head.
Yeah, it was
two words. Yeah, two words.
Aw, fuck. Were those the two
words? I was
going
to go, oh, shit.
Yeah, oh, shit, or aw, fuck, yeah.
Uh-oh, yeah, they both
any
work.
Two words combination, nothing's good.
Motherfucker.
It was all you're praying for, all you're hoping for, you know, is if you're a 49ers fan, is that Chancellor just drops
drop.
It. Mm-hmm. That was the only positive result that could have happened for the 49ers was just please drop it, please drop it, please drop it. But it was completely uncontested.
Right there for him.
Stand there and catch it.
So that first play of the game where Seattle takes the ball after all that crowd noise and the national anthem and everything and all that hype and all the intensity and everything getting amped up, and the first play of the game, Aldon Smith comes around and strips Russell Wilson and takes the ball from him. What did you think when that happened?
I thought it wasn't a good omen for the Seahawks, but to me it was – Russell Wilson just looked like, one, he got caught unaware, and two, he was just being really, really careless with the football. A couple times careless with the football. He was also had that sort of botched exchange after Navarro Bowman's leg bent the wrong way.
So,
you know, Russell Wilson didn't have the best ball security game, but – Seattle did what they needed to do on defense, giving them an extremely short field, and they did exactly what you thought they'd do. They held them to a field goal.
Yeah, that was huge, that whole sequence, which I'm trying to work up to it, going back to the beginning of the game. Cap, the shame of Kaepernick having that fourth quarter meltdown was that the first three quarters were so good. He didn't force passes early. He was running at the first hint of trouble and running great. I mean, he had a Scottie Pippen-like first step when he was getting out of the pocket. Our buddy Tim, who named his fantasy team Pippen Ain't Easy, we got to get him on the show eventually. But, man, he was just hitting the ground and taking off, and it was like, where'd he go? He was just shot out of a cannon. One scramble that he had off of K.J. Wright, the linebacker for Seattle, was coming back from a foot injury. So maybe he was a step slow because of that. But Cap had a scramble off of him being the spy, K.J. Wright being the spy. And it's almost like Kaepernick said to himself, oh, that's the spy. That guy is supposed to stick me? Oh, really? And the next play, he runs for 58 yards and sets up a touchdown. Kaepernick seemed to know what he wanted to do. He wanted to scramble. He wanted to break contain and get down the field. And Russell Wilson sort of didn't quite know what he wanted to do. It took a while for him to get into what he's comfortable doing, but eventually he did exactly what I thought he would do, which is scramble around forever and fling a 51-yard pass to Doug Baldwin. So eventually Russell Wilson got into his comfort zone as well.
Yeah, Russell Wilson's game is the deep ball. I mean, he throws a really nice, catchable, deep ball where it looks, you pointed out Kaepernick, who tries, looks like he's trying to throw everything through the receiver. Everything he throws was just no arc, just straight lasers. And that'll get you so far. I mean, arm strength is a good thing, but, you know, Russell Wilson has some pretty touch that he puts on the ball. He'll just throw that thing out there and let the guys run underneath it and make the catches. And their long passing game was an element that the 49ers just didn't have. You know, and the one time Kaepernick decides to throw a fade or something with a little touch on it, that's the final play of the game for the 49ers when Sherman goes up and deflects it, and it gets picked off. But it was eerily similar to the exact same play that they ended the Super Bowl against Baltimore with, which was the you could almost copy and paste those exact two throws into the corner to Crabtree on that little fade. You know what? Didn't work the first time, and it certainly didn't work the second time. And it seems like Kaepernick, they won a lot of games in a row when Crabtree came back, but he kind of falls in love with the guy. And clearly throwing at Richard Sherman was a bad idea there. That was one hell of an individual effort.
I wrote it down as soon as it happened, so I'll ask you, does a quarterback with better touch make that throw on Richard Sherman at the end of the game, or was that just an impossible situation? You shouldn't have thrown it his way at all.
I think a better quarterback throws that ball to somebody else. You know, that's my honest opinion. I think a better – I don't think Peyton Manning forces that ball in there. There's certain guys that you don't test in that situation. I don't know if they were hoping to catch Sherman napping, but I don't like these one-on-one fade routes at those kinds of moments anyways. You know, a lot of times you see these teams and they start getting closer to the end zone and all of a sudden they start throwing these one-on-ones, or they try to do this little back shoulder thing. And sometimes it works, but that didn't work in the worst possible way. And I don't want to say that it's all, you know, 2020 hindsight. They tried to pick on clearly the best defender on that team, and it blew up in their face. So they got exactly what they deserved. So I think we have the Super Bowl matchup that we should have. I think that neither team that lost did enough to even make a case for themselves to be in the Super Bowl. Denver, Seattle, both the one seeds, both the teams that you needed the home field advantage, did everything they needed to do to earn their spot in the Super Bowl.
Seattle making every catch that San Francisco had. Seattle made it tough on them. It seemed like every single one was in traffic. It was contested. It looked like it hurt because somebody was drilling someone in the ribs. Vernon Davis almost got knocked the fuck out on one of his catches. Seattle had to do that to forge the comeback down 10. And they made it happen. Just kept hammering, kept punishing, beast mode, going through everybody, getting Skittles thrown at them in the end zone. And you know, you have to come like that when you have that style that Seattle has, smash mouth straight up football, and you meet a team that's going to smash mouth you right back. It's basically a test of, okay, who's going to man up the most? And so Seattle, there's only one way they could win was to outman and outsmash San Francisco. And in the end, that's exactly what they wound up doing.
Yeah, and I never dug into the stats. I just went purely on how this felt. I don't have any proof of this. And I could look at the stats after I say this and maybe be proven wrong. But other than Crabtree and Vernon Davis, it never felt like any other 49ers player was involved in that passing game at all.
And that's usually how it is, isn't it? For them, if it's not Vernon or Crabtree or Bolden, Kaepernick basically doesn't have any eyes for anybody else.
Oh, and Bolden did not step up at all in that game. They were not going to let him get off at all. He certainly did not have anything to do in that game at all. Just completely disappeared.
Yeah, he tried. He was trying to get open, but they wouldn't let him because they're so physical and extraterrestrial. So, yeah, Seattle, Denver, Super Bowl 48. We are going to leave the live show and see you on the other side. we are now in the after-show portion of the program where we can get to discuss all the interesting little controversies and sidebars and things that happened after the conference title games on Sunday. Richard Sherman, you describe it as the greatest post-game interview you've ever seen. So I'll let you have your say for whatever you want to talk about for it. And, of course, you know I have a little something to say about it as well.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. Richard Sherman is my new favorite player in the NFL. I don't want to hear anything about how he took away from his team. He scared Aaron Andrews. He was vulgar. He was rude. He just had literally seconds before made the play that sent his team to the Super Bowl. And apparently he has a little bit of a beef with Michael Crabtree, slight, ever so slight beef with Michael Crabtree. There's some history, as we're finding out, between these two with the smack talk. But this was a guy who gets paid a lot of money to do a job, did his job, was excited, wanted everybody watching TV to know, don't mess with me. I have a feeling that, you know, Peyton Manning and Demaryius Thomas or anybody who's going to have to line up against this guy, nobody's excited to have to play against this guy. But it was so honest, you know, brutally honest, definitely. It wasn't like a, you know, fairy tale moment. It wasn't the I'm going to Disney World kind of moment for Sherman. I doubt they're going to be running up to him after the Super Bowl if the Seahawks win. Richard Sherman, you just won the Super Bowl. What are you going to do? Oh, I'm going to beat up that motherfucker Crabtree for talking shit. You know? I'm the best corner in the game. But so I doubt they're going to be running up to him. They'll probably go up to Russell Wilson, who I'm sure will have the vanilla, boring thing to say. But I wish more guys were this honest. You know what? You made the play. Good for you. You earned it. He is one of the, if not the best cornerbacks in the league. Good for him. Totally good for him. I loved it. I thought it was entertaining. I wish they would have let him keep talking. It was great.
It was classless. It was not good sportsmanship, especially with the universal choke sign thrown in there at the end when he stuck his hand out mockingly for Crabtree as if to say, hey, all things are all good between us. It was a nice game, sir. Now let's go have a spot of tea. That was completely disingenuous. He may have been saying good game, but he didn't really mean it. It was not his best moment for humility. And it's okay. All that's okay. We don't all have to be Peyton Manning and Tom Brady saying the same vanilla bullshit after the game that also disingenuous. We played a good game and our opponents also are also great and we grateful to play against them and we just are grateful for the opportunity they don't mean that either. They're just saying what they think that people want to hear. Richard Sherman, in a way, was saying what people want to hear. It's just different people than the status quo. It's not the Midwest housewife at home knitting. That's what Tom Brady and Peyton Manning are saying. That's what they're saying, what they think that person wants to hear. Richard Sherman was saying what the people that he's used to being around want to hear. And the people that Richard Sherman hang around they're not thugs, first of all. Let me get that out there and debunk that whole thing, because there's a lot of thug being thrown around at him because he's a black man with braids that was talking aggressively. So therefore he has to be a thug when he's, you know, salutatorian of his high school and graduated from Stanford with a 3.9 grade point average. There's a lot of things Richard Sherman is, but is not one of them. And if you call him that, you're just showing your ignorance. So, but the people that Richard Sherman was talking to, they want that honesty too. They're like you, Jason. They want something more real. They want something with a little more substance. And he gave it to you sort of in a WWE type of way, and that's okay. It's entertaining. It gets attention. It makes him a bigger star. Tony Kornheiser on PCI compared it to Deion Sanders making himself a bigger star with his mouth and then backing it up on the field. And I think that's a great analogy. You can't be a bigger star than Deion Sanders was when he was at the top of his game. And it's also a very good analogy because from everything I've heard, Deion Sanders is not like that at all when the cameras are turned off. He's rather quiet and humble, and Richard Sherman is the same way from what I've heard as well. So this is more just trumped up for the TV cameras. It's their real personality. It's Richard Sherman's real personality. It's just amped up, you know, turned up, you know, to 11, you know, the knob that goes to 11. And that's fine. It's okay. It scares certain people, but it's okay. It's not what you're used to. It's not the status quo. It's not the same old, and that's okay. We don't all have to be the same people. I feel like I'm making the same argument that I made back with the Richie Incognito, Jonathan Martin situation, that we're not all the same. Just because some guy said that you could use the N-word and it was okay doesn't mean that this guy is okay with you using the N-word on him. I don't think he had a vote. And similar, Richard Sherman, it's okay that he can give that interview and cut that promo. Just because it's not something you're used to seeing doesn't mean it's a bad thing. It's a little tasteless, a little classless, yeah. Not a bad thing. My Facebook friend Landon said he didn't see anything wrong with it. You know, I was trying to get some opinions and solicit some other opinions to talk about it on the show. It was a much ado about nothing. There's a lot of people that get their panties twisted up. There's a lot of the same people that got angry at Dan Le Batard a couple of weeks ago for selling his vaunted Hall of Fame vote, because if anybody does anything outside of the norm, outside of what we consider normal, then there's something wrong with him, and we have to criticize and crucify that person. And we really don't have to. We really need to start accepting people that are not the same as everybody else, because it's really starting to become a bland, boring world. You're sick of the typical post-game interviews. We all played hard, and we're very proud of it. We're all getting a little sick of that, and I, for one, applaud Richard Sherman for going rock on us and, if you smell, and giving us a little flavor, a little something different from what we usually get.
Yeah, I would appreciate a big-time star player articulating, that doesn't have to be the exact same way, because like you said, we're not all the same. But wouldn't it be nice to get some honesty from some of these guys? Wouldn't it be nice if they walked up to Peyton Manning after they beat the Patriots and just had him said, I love beating those guys. I was unstoppable today. They couldn't cover any of my receivers. They couldn't take away any of my throws. I did everything I wanted to do against them, and I just shredded those guys. No, you get the, oh, it's always tough to beat Tom Brady, and those guys are great competitors. And it's like, oh, shut up. You're going to say the same thing all the time. Why do they even bother with this? The whole point of putting a microphone in somebody's face after the game, especially right after the game, is because you want that moment. You want the guy who's going to say what he really feels, and then you finally get it, and then you complain? This is what you want. Did you want Richard Sherman? Yeah, well, Richard, what was going through your mind as the ball was in the air? You know what was going through his mind? I can't believe they're throwing on me. That's probably what he's like, oh, this is mine. I own this guy. You know, they're not. That's exactly what he said. Now, he said it in a different way, but he just sent his team to the Super Bowl. He was happy. He was excited. He was pumped. He was also, I think, offended that they threw on him. How dare they throw at him? And he showed them. And he shoved it right up their ass, and he let them know he did. Good for him.
He said it in an angry way with dreadlocks and dark skin standing next to a pretty blonde thing. And the whole confluence of all of that made Twitter just explode on Sunday night. It was quite interesting to see. Yeah, Peyton Manning, you bring him up. His most famous on-field interview is the one time in which he veered towards being honest because somebody had pissed him off. And it's when he was talking about the idiot liquored up kicker.
Oh, his liquored
one
up
that
idiot kicker.
We still remember. Yeah. That's the only one we remember because it was honest.
Yeah. It's the rare moments, you know, of lucidity that these guys have versus the usual PR canned responses. And, of course, that's what you remember. Richard Sherman has just stamped himself into immortality with this. Yes, he went against the team or what, who knows what, but you're still a team that's made up of individuals, and he was asked a question about himself, and he didn't give the usual, you know, what went through your mind while the ball was in the air. I was just hoping that the good Lord Jesus Christ would give me the power to reach up and by the grace of God, get my hand on the ball. And, you know, you hear a lot of these guys, they say this stuff, and it's just the same thing all the time. Richard Sherman told you exactly what he was thinking, that Michael Crabtree's a bum. He, through no uncertain terms, just told you that Michael Crabtree is a complete, in his mind, waste of a wide receiver, and they shouldn't have been throwing the ball at him. What were they thinking? And I loved all 25 seconds of it. You know, it could have been, it's one of the Twitter things that I saw that I retweeted was the guy saying that would have been better had he been being interviewed by Mean Gene. And that was a really good analogy, because if you would have taken Aaron Andrews out of there and you put old Mean Gene Okerlund in there, that would have been about perfect, wouldn't it?
Hell yeah. Absolutely.
So I completely think that this is fabric, and this is going to just blow up in the next 2 weeks. This is going to all be this is about the next 2 weeks. And I'll tell you what, nobody on Denver still wants anything to do with this guy.
Yeah, that doesn't change at all. No matter how many people are surrounding Richard Sherman at Media Day, no matter how much money and endorsements he may have made himself in Beats by Dre endorsements or what have you, the fact is, when the game starts in a couple of weeks, in a week and a half on Sunday, it's going to be Peyton Manning with his long-armed receivers, Demaryius Thomas, Julius Thomas, all looking to find a way to avoid Richard Sherman because nobody wants to play against him.
And I think he might have even made himself more of a threat because he's talked it up so much. Anything come in his direction in the Super Bowl. If he gets burned, sure, that's a big story. But if Peyton Manning tests him and loses, then he's stamped. Like, that becomes like, it goes from being a nice little 2 week story into like an all timer if he has a huge Super Bowl.
Yep. And my last statement is all these people treating Richard Sherman as if he's a bad guy for the stuff that he did. Yeah, a little not sportsmanlike, you know, all that, but a bad person, a thug, and all that. Didn't Leonard Little get drunk and kill somebody? Isn't he a bad guy? Isn't Dante Stallworth? Didn't he smash a guy on the causeway in Miami who was trying to run and catch a bus? Isn't Aaron Hernandez in jail right now, accused of killing multiple people? Get a grip on who's a good guy and who's a bad guy. And that's my last word on that. This broadcast is copyrighted. You can email this show in much less detail at gmail.com with any comments. You can tweet us. I'm at IMLDDre. Jason's at IMLDJTG. And I have a review of this past Sunday up on our blog in much less detail at blogspot.com. We will see you Saturday night for our Honors and Dishonors 2013. I'm Dre, he's Jay, we'll see you then.